This episode is sponsored by yet another company that I truly stand behind, and that is Levels. And Levels is going to be offering you, the Behind the Shield podcast audience, a discount that I will tell you about at the end of this introduction. Now, before I even dive into what Levels does, when I had a conversation with their CEO and founder, Josh Clementi, he underlined such an important topic. So many of us rely on visits to our physicians to tell us how we are doing, and that is so backward. I am an absolute believer in putting autonomy back into the hands of the individual so they can take care of their own health. Now, what Levels does is it gives us the metrics so we can see exactly how everything is internally. So they help people improve their health through continuous glucose monitoring, comprehensive lab tests, and metabolic coaching. Now, through their three levels that they offer, they have programs that focus on weight loss, heart health, and glucose stability. I've now been through this program twice, and I'll kind of illustrate what it will look like. So you make an initial consultation with your Levels coach. You wear a continuous blood sugar monitor for 1 month. You'll complete a lab panel, and I did it through Quest Diagnostics. A clinician with Levels will then analyze your results and give you an action plan. That's when you can then start hitting your own health goals and in real time track your own progress. And then depending on the level you subscribe to, there's also a second blood work so you can now see how you're doing 6 months later. Now, by combining AI data, AI-powered insights, and human coaching together, 80% of Levels members improve their biomarkers. Now, as I mentioned, Levels is offering you, the audience of the Behind the Shield podcast, $100 off your first order if you use the promo code SHIELD at levels.com. And if you're interested in getting Levels for your department, email Josh Clemente, the founder and CEO of Levels, at josh@levels.com. And if you want to hear the origin story and so much more about this incredible company, listen to my interview with CEO and founder Josh Clemente on episode 1159 of the Behind the Shield podcast. Welcome to the Behind the Shield podcast. As always, my name is James Gearing, and this week I have an incredibly powerful and important episode for you. Stephanie Waugh is a firefighter and the wife of Marcus Waugh, the firefighter strongman and my guest on episode 954. In this conversation, we discuss not only being part of a firefighter family as a spouse, but ultimately her joining the fire service and now having both partners in this profession. So we unpack a host of topics, from her strength and conditioning routine, trying to parent around a firefighter schedule, the impact of mandatory overtime on parenting, and so much more. Now, before we get to this incredible conversation, as I say every week, please just take a moment. Go to whichever app you listen to this on, subscribe to the show, leave feedback, and leave a rating. Every single 5-star rating truly does elevate this podcast, therefore making it easier for others to find. And this is a free library of well over 1,100 episodes now. So all I ask in return is that you help share these incredible men and women's stories so I can get them to every single person on planet Earth who needs to hear them. So with that being said, I introduce to you Stephanie Waugh. Enjoy. Well, Stephanie, I want to start by saying two things. Firstly, thank you to your husband, my previous guest, Marcus, for, you know, making this connection. And secondly, to welcome you onto the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Thank you. And happy Veterans Day to you. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, I'm happy to all the veterans. I never served in that capacity. But yeah, I mean, it's something I think that we've got to remind ourselves is that the sacrifices that all these generations before us made, you know, the way we honor them is to avoid war, not just get pulled into another one. So
agreed.
I hope that lesson is strong today.
Yes.
All right. Well, Very first question. Where on planet Earth are we finding you this afternoon?
I am at home in Delta, Ohio, and it's cold. It got cold. It's snow. We got about 4 inches of snow recently.
Oh, wow. We're even cold here, which for Florida, I mean, it's not going to impress you with the numbers, but we were like basically 31 degrees last night, which is a little nippy for us. So, but I love it, though. It's mm-hmm. once in a while, I guess it's cold here. Well, I'd like to start at the very beginning of your journey. So tell me where you were born and tell me a little bit about your family dynamic, what your parents did, how many siblings.
So I was born in Pontiac, Michigan, and I have quite a big family, extended family. My parents were split. My mom, she did salon work. She did hair at first, but then she became a stay-at-home mom. And I have three siblings on that side, my mom and my stepdad. I have two brothers and a sister. And then my dad, he did industrial work most of his life, and he is married to my stepmom. I have a brother on that side as well. So in all, three brothers, one sister.
The big family then.
Yes.
What kind of dynamic was there after the divorce? Were you guys able to retain a good relationship? Obviously, some people, they disappear off the face of the earth. Some, you know, exes are best friends with each other. Where were they on that scale?
Yeah, they actually didn't get along. It was quite a rough dynamic, I would say, between the parents. And, you know, we made it through. We grew up okay. It was okay in the household. My dad and my stepmom, you know, they got along real well. And that kind of also showed me, you know, what a happy home should be like. And then same with my mom and my stepdad on that side. So it was best for them just not to be together.
I think that's okay. I think there's Dr. Shefali, I think her name is a relationship expert that, you know, I like some of the things that she talks about. But yeah, there's that shame and guilt about, you know, marriage ending, air quotes, you know, failing, if you like. And I think that's rubbish. You know, if you did find yourself with another person and as you evolve and you have children and you find yourselves growing apart, I think it's much healthier to then, you know, go your separate ways, do whatever's best for the children collectively. But yeah, if that person is not the right fit for you, then you're going to be so much happier. And then the children are going to grow up in a much happier household if each of those finds the right fit as far as the partner.
Yeah, exactly. I agree. They were both very young when they had me. My mom's 17, my dad 19. So they started out young and just kind of learned where they were going to go in life to be happy.
Absolutely. I've always said relationships are like food. You know, you have honey, which is the childhood sweethearts that die holding hands at 99 years old. Mm-hmm. You have the gas station sushi, which is a one night stand. And then there's there's all kinds of different ones in between, you know, and if yours is, you know, run its course, then that's okay. That was just, you know, where it was supposed to end.
Yeah.
We're going to obviously talk about, you know, the physical fitness side and the strongman, all those kind of areas in a little bit. When you were a young girl, what were you playing and doing as far as sports and exercise?
Well, my dad put me in almost everything when I was like young, elementary to middle school. I started out in dance. I, you know, dabbled in a little bit of soccer, softball, basketball. Getting into high school, I strictly danced on our dance team. Then coming out of high school, didn't do too much for a few years. I actually had my daughter young as well. I was 19 when I had my daughter, but then afterward I worked, after I had her, I worked at a gym and I got very into working out. And then that led me into powerlifting and strongman, competitively. So that's where I was at with sports.
What were you dreaming of becoming as far as career aspirations when you were still in high school?
You know, I never knew. I could never really figure out. I had like little ideas that after I had my daughter, I wanted to be an OB. I always wanted to help someone or help people. Also being in a broken family, I wanted to go into social work. I did not join the Fire Academy until 20... 17 when I was 27, I think, was my first fire academy. I've done two fire academies. So my first one was around that time, 2017. I think my whole life dynamic kind of led me into firefighting, wanting to help people, and then also being physically capable. I was like, yeah, I can do this. So
what professions you did prior to that, though? Once you left school, what were some of the hats that you wore?
I did a little bit of everything. I did some waitressing, some catering, worked in retail a little bit, and worked at numerous gyms and childcare as well within the gyms. So.
And how did the initial introduction to gyms lead you to the world of powerlifting and strongman?
Really meeting people. One of the trainers at the gym, the first gym I worked at, he was training other people competitively in powerlifting. And I kind of just always had this source or this feeling of wanting to see how strong I could be. So I was always just trying to lift as much weight as I could. And then he introduced me into powerlifting, got into that competitively. And then after, I'm trying to think of like when, I think I was like in powerlifting for about 7 years, and then I was introduced into strongman, and that had a lot more variety within the lifting, which was made it a little more fun. And then I started doing that, trying to think of how many years ago, maybe more like 10 years ago now.
Now I'm looking at you through the camera, but obviously it's hard to judge your size. Are you... What's your kind of build as a woman usually? Like, what's your weight?
On a normal basis, I sit at like 115 pounds. I'm kind of tiny. I've actually found that not so helpful when you're competing, because a lot of the girls in that weight class are so much bigger and stronger than I am. I've kind of taken a break from competitive strongman, but I still train it to keep fit for the job, just because it transitions so well. And I actually just started, I signed up for jiu-jitsu because I was thinking that might be more my path as far as my smaller stature.
Well, I think this is the thing, like when we get into obviously the fire service, my son is just a bit taller than me now, which he absolutely loves, but he's built like me. He's still very slim. And he keeps talking about, well, I want to look like this guy, or I want to look like this guy. And I'm like, this is what you got to understand, is we're given the body that we're given. Mm-hmm. So the ultimate thing is to be as strong as and as fit as you can within that body, not trying to chase someone else's physique.
Yeah, I had to learn that.
So what was your mindset then? Obviously, you're more of a petite build compared to, you know, some of the like Christian Rhodes who I've had on the show. What was that path as far as debunking the initial prejudices that one would think of as, you know, women can't insert, you know, bias here, into being successful in powerlifting and then strongman?
Oh, man, I always say, I mean, I think we can always do anything that we want to do. Is it just depends on how much commitment you want to put toward it. Trying to stay at a higher weight was just a lot of eating. It was like, you know, forceful eating. So it kind of got tiring. And then you got kids maybe, and, you know, school or whatever else you got going on. So it does take a lot of time and commitment. Like I said, I always think we can do what we want as long as we're willing to put the time and commitment into it. It's just, I think I realized for myself, I just wanted to balance out a few more things. So I scaled back on being in the gym every day, and then trying to eat three meals before noon, you know. So just learning my body and what would be best for staying fit and physical was something that I kind of had to realize once I decided, okay, this isn't really for me, but something will be.
That's something that I've realized the older I've got as well. And I never really got pulled into the, you know, eat a lot, try and get bigger. But when you look at the elite performers, so Marcus is a good example, trying to, you know, win strongman competitions. Now you're really chasing that top kind of 5% of performance. And therefore, yes, this is what you need to do as an athlete to eke out that, you know, 5%. But I think the other, you know, 90-95% of us kind of get that twisted where that's what we're supposed to do and we're not. If you just want to be a good firefighter, you don't need to be having 12 meals a day and waking up and, you know, eating at 2 a.m. and 5 a.m. like the bodybuilders do.
Yes.
And, you know, if you take a step back, firstly, look at the availability of food from our ancestors. No one would be able to eat that way. So it's not, you know, evolutionary. It doesn't make any sense. And then again, if you stop eating that way and your body reverts back to, because I'm, as you can see, I'm slim built too, reverts back to its natural size. It's trying to tell you something. It doesn't want to be, in my case, you know, 190, 200 pounds. It wants to be 170, 175.
Oh, exactly. Exactly.
So talk to me about what kind of led you into the fire service. What even put that idea in your head in the first place?
When I was, so I'm kind of like, I moved back in with my parents at, let me think, I was probably 25-ish. And I'm looking through our community college catalog, and they had a fire academy. And then also, it was actually, First it was the newspaper. I saw a newspaper and one of the nearby cities had hired their first full-time female firefighter. And then I think that's when it kind of sparked an interest in me. And I was like, yes, I think I could do this. This is what I can do. And so that's when I went ahead and I was like looking through the catalog. They had the fire academy, signed up for it, ended up loving it. Learned you had to be EMT. Most departments require you to be EMT. So I went through that. And then I started in private ambulance for about 4 years before I went into another fire academy and got on a fire department.
So you had to repeat the fire academy because you weren't hired within a parameter? What was the reason you repeated it?
The first one I went through it was through the community college, but the second one I went through was actually the academy that the department required us to go through. It was their own academy. Some of the inner cities, most of the inner city ones have, I believe.
Gotcha. Okay. How competitive was it to be a firefighter when you were testing?
For the department I'm on now, it was very competitive. There was thousands and thousands of applicants at the time. And I want to say there was probably about six women in my class too, which is great. They're hiring more and more women these days, and which I think is amazing. But the first one I went through, it was just more of applying, having all your ducks in a row. And then I think it was fairly simple to get in after the application. We didn't have to do a physical test in the beginning. The second one I went through, like I said, way more competitive, thousands of applicants. And then also having to do the physical agility before getting on. I actually failed my first physical agility because I wasn't training very well for it. And then I went back, did it a second time, passed it. Thank goodness. I was so happy.
I was going to ask you that. So you've got a background of some of the strength sports. You know, what did you find, or how did you find they served you? And then where were the deficiencies?
The strength, I mean, being strong for my size, I think was definitely a strength, but endurance was definitely where I think I found myself needing some work, just having to carry all the stuff for longer periods of time, or you know, hitting the tire with the hammer really took me out, because it just, like I said, the endurance of it, I was like, I need to build this up. Didn't have much of that, just because a lot of what's in lifting is, well, at least for, I would say, powerlifting and maybe some strongman lifts, but It's more of a very quick, you know, a deadlift, just real quick. You don't get so much endurance when you're training that. You gain the strength, but I needed to definitely mix those together for passing.
So what did you change to make sure that you improve that area?
Weight vests, running, stair climbers, keeping weight on top of, keeping weight on top of me, whether it was carrying something or having a weight vest on or flipping a huge tire for just like a longer distance, I would say.
Now, you mentioned before about, you know, the challenges of, you know, being a single parent. Obviously, I've talked about this on here before myself. That was the big thing that made me leave my second last apartment, was that being told as a single parent that I was going to get mandatory over and over and over again.
Yeah.
So now you have a daughter, you know, what was the impact on that when you started doing the shift work?
So it was a big transition for me, because here's my thing. Like, I moved, my daughter and I lived in Michigan all of our lives. And what I did is I had met my husband, and he was already on a fire department, which was hiring at the time, and that was 2 hours away from where I lived. So I kind of had to make this big choice. And I'll tell you, I felt a little guilty, because it's like, why are you moving away from her? But at the same time, for me, I think I felt inside like, I'm doing this for our life, for our stability, because finding my husband, someone who was a great role model and loving and caring to me and my daughter, and then also getting a full-time job, which I had not had beforehand. I mean, even when I was working private ambulance, it wasn't full-time. It was contingent, part-time. And I would sign up, I would sign up for like full-time hours, but I was still contingent on paper. Striving for the stability and the home life was a big factor in moving. So what I had to do was I had to move, and then we kind of went through a court system, the whole court thing with the parenting time. I had to really sacrifice my parenting time, obviously, when it came to that. But she, looking back now, I mean, I wouldn't have made a different decision. We're both, I can see the happiness that she has now and the fulfillment, the joy, and the comfortability she's had in this life that we've created. So when we were getting our schedules, that's what it was. When we were getting our schedules before we hit the line, I'm like, I don't know how I'm going to do this as I'm going through this parenting time and custody thing, just going through a transition because I had moved away from her. It's funny because there was just this one moment in time I was like, I might look into something different, just because it was actually right after I had my son. I said, I might look into something different because the scheduling was taking a toll on me. And my daughter said, but I don't want you to stop being a firefighter. And so I know that she knows, we do this for them, even having to sacrifice that time with the schedule.
It is tough. I mean, when I went through my divorce, I was already on shift. I'd been a firefighter for several years by that point. And luckily, the dynamic of the way the marriage dissolved, there wasn't a big fight from the other side. So I was able to put in writing that when I'm on shift, he's with her. And when I'm off shift, he's with me, which basically ends up being 50-50.
Yeah.
And there wasn't any pushback, thank goodness. So I was very fortunate compared to most people in the fire service that have gone through this, where, you know, I kind of in a way didn't lose any time with him. But, you know, I see the impact of, you know, whether it's a residence issue, as you mentioned, like 2 hours away to see your child, or you know, God forbid, some of my firefighter friends that, you know, they didn't get to see him. The mother held them from their child, or vice versa, the father, whatever the dynamic was.
Yeah.
And it's something that people don't think about. When you're already working shifts, when you're already exhausted, when you're already getting mandatory, and then you're trying to juggle these commitments to see your child. I mean, that's a very, very important part of the conversation. And again, goes to why I talk about the work week all the time. Is that when these people go home, that might be the only 24-hour period they get to see their child that week. And then they get told that they can't go home because, you know, mandatory or whatever. So this is a really important topic that people need to be thinking about is, you know, sometimes people are navigating an already challenging schedule to see their children if they are divorced parents. And this can be woefully impacted by, you know, understaffing because of mismanagement.
Yeah, that is how it kind of happened with me too. We have a Kelly day, and we were like we had to choose our Kelly days. But I mean, they kind of told us like, you're going to get this day, you're going to get that day. And then when I was looking at the schedule, they gave me my Kelly day, and it was actually a surprise to me because it wasn't the day that they had said, oh, you're going to get Tuesday, you're going to get Wednesday or whatever. And I kind of in my mind already had like, okay, this is how it's going to work if I get this day or this day. And I'll use this Kelly day to have my time with my daughter. And so when they switched it up and I saw that I had like this day, I just asked, I'm like, you know, if the Tuesday is easier, I'm willing to take the Tuesday. And then they were like, how dare you question? And I'm like, oh, you know, in the beginning, you don't want to say it. You don't want to say anything in the beginning because you are just like bottom of the totem pole, as they say. but it ended up working out okay. I just made it work the way the schedule was, using Kelly weeks, Kelly days, to also go and have time with her.
What about, you said you had a son. Is that the two of you now have a son?
Yep. My husband and I have a son now. He'll be 3 in January.
Okay. And you guys work the same fire department?
Yes.
Okay. So that's another interesting dynamic. So you've got your daughter and you have to do the, you know, obviously the visits with her. What about navigating parenting of a very young child when both of you are on shift in the same fire department?
That's been quite a learning experience for us. I'll tell you, when they're so young, when they're just newborn, I would say that first year it was so rough just being tired all the time and kind of doing it by yourself. So our schedule is 24 on, 48 offs, and we're on separate schedules because of dogs and baby. So he works and then I work and then we have a day off. And even those solo days, you're dragging sometimes. You're just wishing the other one was home helping with you. But and then you're going to work the next day and staying up all night. What we've found is, I said he goes to work and then I go to work. What we found is if we switch that, because I usually had to drop him, the baby, off in the mornings at the in-laws, but my husband, he has less to get ready in the morning. I think it's a guy thing, you know? So I think we found like little things like that. Like, it's going to be easier for you to take this shift and me to take this shift and you kind of do the morning drop-offs, and I'm better at getting stuff ready for the day when we have stuff planned, getting, you know, packed up and whatever we need to do to get ready for the day. I'm kind of better at that. So I took on that in a way with our shifts switching. It's just little things that we kind of had to learn throughout the first year, year and a half, on how it's going to be easiest on both of us. But even now, it works out okay. I still am kind of trying to work out in my head, like, what can we do to where we're both working, but maybe not these shifts. I mean, we've considered like hiring a nanny and going on the same shift for the 24 hours, but that's, you know, that's a lot of money. And you're like, let's just, I don't even know. It'll be easier once he's in school.
In school for?
Just once he starts kindergarten or preschool.
Oh, I thought you were talking about your husband. Okay, the child.
Oh, no, I'm sorry. The baby. Their schedules will be easier once he's in school, just not having to do the whole thing all day by yourself and then go to work or whatever, go to the gym to stay fit or whatever else you got to do, errands, you know.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd be interested to get your take on this. One of the things that came up aside from the 24/72, when we work 24-hour shifts, you think of that as a dial that you could technically spin whenever you want. You start this time and you end 24 hours later. And someone, you know, I think it was Sarah Jenke, really brought this to my attention initially. Why do we start at 7 or 7:30 or 8, whatever the start time is? You know, why? Because so many of us that travel a long way, I usually drove about 70 miles each way to the station. So I was getting up at, you know, 5 in the morning, 4:45 to get to the station early to make sure that I relieve, you know, who I'm relieving before they get hit with a late call. Mm-hmm. And it's lunacy, because if you look at sleep deprivation, we arrive sleep deprived on that very first shift because most of us are getting up really early. And so the solution is, well, why not start at 11 a.m. or 12 noon? So now you get to wake up, have, you know, breakfast with your child if you need to go to daycare or obviously do the switch on shift, whatever it is. Now everyone's awake, everyone's, you know, ready to get on with their day. And then conversely, whoever was on shift, if they had a brutal night, then they get to get a couple of extra hours sleep before they come home and their mom or dad or, you know, whatever it is. So what is your perception of your unique family dynamic if shift change was, say, 11 a.m. instead of early?
Oh, man. I mean, I feel like that would be definitely beneficial, especially because my daughter's going to be moving in with us soon. So we're going to be having, and then my son's going to be 3 and, you know, in the next year or so going on into pre-K or kindergarten. So, I mean, thinking about that, having that would be so beneficial, just being able to get the kids breakfast and spend some time with them in the morning, do the morning routine, and then, you know, then get off to work. And even so in the mornings at work, not having to wake up so early, maybe just to go home. You know what I mean? Maybe you won't get the call at 5 or 6 a.m. Sometimes that happens. But if it came in later, maybe you get a little extra sleep that morning before you go home and then have to pick up your kids and have nighttime routine. That would be definitely, I think, beneficial. I like that idea. We've kind of, within our department, I mean, we don't do that, but I know it's been thrown around, like maybe even at specific stations having different start times, but we'll see where that goes.
Well, the thing is, it's a completely free solution. It doesn't cost anyone anything. But when I reflected, once they kind of brought that up and I started thinking about my career, I did 24/48, no Kelly, for most of my career. And that meant that I only spent 1 out of every 3 mornings with my family for 14 years. Because the first night, obviously I'm awake, the first morning, excuse me, I'm awake before anyone else is. So I kind of sneak out and leave them. The second day, by the time I get back from that 70-mile drive, they're already at work or school anyway. And then that third day was the only morning that I actually woke up next to my wife and then, you know, sat down and had breakfast with my son. And so just for $0, turn that into 2 out of 3.
Yeah.
And give that person who was on shift a couple of hours. So when they come home, they're not on edge because, you know, they got toned out at 7 a.m., you know, all called, wake up, you know, to do what? There's no reason whatsoever to wake those people up. So to just make it 11 or 12, you know, now they can sleep in, get a couple of hours. The people that are coming on shift got to spend that morning with their loved ones and then go to work. Like, it just seems like such a great solution. And then coupled with the 24/72, that would be life-changing, I think, for a lot of people in the fire service.
Absolutely. I agree. That would be wonderful.
So what about the actual profession itself? You know, as you kind of enter and you see now behind the curtain of some of the, you know, areas that you're protecting, what were some of the aha moments or some of the career calls that you had?
So when, you know, when I hit the line and got into the fire service, it was really exciting at first. And then, like, very slowly, but also soon, you kind of just realize the toll it takes on an individual. You always hear someone say, oh yeah, he used to be so happy. He used to be so alive and ready for the day. He used to be great at this and great at that. And now they're grumpy. Like, I feel like I've heard like something along those lines from so many people when you're meeting everyone as a new person on the job. And they're like, you know, like I said, they're, oh, he used to be so funny. He used to be this and he used to be that. And I'm like, well, why aren't they anymore? And so you kind of take a look and you're like, because we're having to do this, this, and this. And I think I found, that it's maybe, in my personal opinion, it's a little bit of being uneducated in our health of ourselves. And honestly, sometimes sleep, how important sleep is to our bodies. I don't know where I learned it or how I've learned it, but maybe just from personal experience. But sleep is, it releases nutrients into our bodies when we're sleeping to keep us healthy. We can't be sleep deprived and then go help others at our full potential, you know? So I feel like I kind of just seen that.
What about that? So we got the sleep deprivation, which we'll dive into in a second. What other areas were adding to the stresses? Because I mean, this is the sad fact when you hear about people and they're like, oh God, they're such a pain in the ass. They're so salty, whatever it is. Or they're getting into trouble now. They got a drinking problem. I always say, well, what were they like when you hired them?
Yeah.
Were they turds at the front door? In which case that was a bad hire and shame on you. But, you know, because that person would not taking away the empathy for that person, but that person needs to do the work before they come to the job if they're already, you know, salty as a probie. But that's not the case. As you said, most people like, oh, well, they were amazing until, well, then newsflash, you think maybe it's the job, you know, call me crazy. I'm no scientist, but if they used to be really nice and now they're not nice, then, you know, what do you think the common denominator is? So sleep deprivation, huge part of it. But what culturally, you know, all these other areas, what are some other things? Because you had quite a fresh set of eyes coming in. Were you starting to see we're adding to this compounding effect of beating down our men and women in uniform?
Oh, man. Mental health and our call volume. And then also, I don't know how. Maybe I'll get to it, but at some point after I had my son, I think it was all just honestly something that maybe was personal that happened to me within the job. I went back. We had 8 weeks. We're given 8 weeks for maternity, at 70% of our pay. But even that for me, because I was new and didn't have a ton of vacation time built up. And then on top of that, I was very sick throughout my whole pregnancy. So I even went off payroll because I used all my sick time, any comp time I had, and vacation time. I had to go through it all and then had to go off payroll. So going back to work, I kind of had to go back at that 8 weeks. I thought it was going to be enough time for me. I was excited to get back on the line, but then I realized it wasn't. So Breastfeeding was one of the things I had to read studies. When I went back to the line, I actually ended up getting lots of fires. Almost every 2 hours, I was getting a fire, maybe two fires every tour. And I was breastfeeding at the time as well. So I was looking up studies on breastfeeding and obviously live firefighting. And the studies that I found said that it recommended that you dump every 3 days. And I'm like, well, we work every 3 days. And I kind of felt that decision of stopping breastfeeding was forced upon me. And then I was like, well, this is not right. So sometimes I think it's like little personal things that kind of happened to me throughout going through being new on a department and then also growing my family, I should say. Kind of showed me that happens not only, you know, with women in maternity, but everywhere else too. We're kind of maybe don't have all the resources that we probably could have to benefit our health. And also, I mean, I always think too, like this job isn't necessarily like, why can't it be more family oriented? Like I get it's a special job and I get we sign up to do, you know, this special thing, helping people and we find that we're good at it, but then we forget about taking care of ourselves in the midst of that.
You just sparked something in my mind. When you think about, especially like the Scandinavian countries where they get a lot of maternity leave and paternity leave, just culturally for the entire nation. Mm-hmm. You know, there's a lot more time spent with that child when they were so young and so impressionable before the parents go back to the workforce. I think we're one of the worst when it comes to time, if I'm not mistaken. And if you think about then the ripple effect of everything from the ill health of our children, I mean, you know, the obesity that we're seeing now, type 2 diabetes and all those areas, through to, you know, the mental health challenges that we're seeing. I guarantee you that some of that is probably related to the fact that a lot of these parents are being forced back into work soon after these children are born. And so you've almost got like, you know, you've got the lack of skin on skin contact. You've got probably a subconscious sense of abandonment when a tiny child is now not with either parent because they're off, you know, on shift or whatever it is. It's not even the fire service conversation as much as a culturally American conversation. Mm-hmm. You know, they might think that they're saving money, you know, at the front end with, oh, we'll just go back to work and, you know, get wages coming in again. But it'd be really interesting to look at these Scandinavian countries and say, you know, how much does that extra time with that child early on actually save, you know, the country down the road, making these kids healthier and evolving into healthier adults. And I guarantee you there's probably a linear relationship.
Yeah, I agree. I'll tell you too, just having our son, it's funny with our schedules being opposite and then trying to be on the same page, raising him. My husband, my son kind of has like a stability with, a structure with my husband, and then he kind of has like the structure with me at home. And then when we're both home, we're kind of always running around. So that's that day. But I compare it. I kind of make myself frustrated sometimes because I compare it to, he's with my in-laws a lot. My in-laws are both retired and at home, and they are always together with them. And I'm just like, they almost have a better structure for our son than we do, you know, just being at home with him, being with him they're with him almost every day, yeah, for some hours a day. But, I find that, kind of rough to work around being different schedules and trying to raise him on the same page.
Well, I mean, I think this is it. I mean, I know my son's, you know, mother, my son's mother's mother, excuse me, my son's grandmother, she was having to work a lot to pay the bills, to support her. Mm-hmm. But that they, she wasn't physically in the house as much as, you know, a lot of parents would hope they would. And you look at, you know, how we're supposed to be in ancient times, you know, they say it takes a village because that's exactly where we all were. Unless we were going off on a hunt or going to war, you know, the all the family units would be there still. So it's not saying that, you know, we all just stop working and spend 18 years, you know, with our children, but how far have we got from perfect? And can we at least, you know, move the needle back towards getting these households intact so these children do have, you know, more normalcy, you know, and feel like they're part of an intact, you know, home unit rather than as my son had to bounce from house to house to house to house, which mm-hmm. I hated, absolutely hated.
Yeah. I agree. Yeah. I would say I kind of, like I said, I kind of find that a little frustrating here and there when he has to spend so much time at the in-laws, but at the same time, like, he's very loved and cared for over there. So we're very lucky to have it, but it's kind of like what I want for our family as well, but it's hard to do with our jobs and the lack of family orient that our job has.
If you were queen for a day, because I think it's the ultimate superpower is to be humble enough to say the way we're doing it may not be the right way, and therefore explore better ways of doing this and look around the world and see different, you know, models that maybe are more successful, or in this country, more successful. What changes would you put in place to allow more family time, to allow, you know, these parents to actually have the time off to be with their children, or like you said, even through pregnancy? What are some of the things now that you've got with this, you know, more unique lens that, you know, maybe would be a good idea for the future of the fire service?
A lot of it is like things I've heard probably on your podcast, because once I started listening to your podcast, I was like, this is it. Like 24/72 would be great, or even changing the start times of our schedule, maternity and paternity leave. I wish there was a little bit more. I feel a little entitled saying that, to be honest. But
well, no, you're queen for a day. You get to do whatever you want. Remember that. So forget about what people think and any of that. If you could, you know, imagine what would be the right thing to do.
Yeah, I would wish for a little more maternity and paternity leave as well. Being on the same department, for us, they made us split the 8 weeks if we wanted to, or like we didn't have to, but if I took the whole 8 weeks, then my husband wasn't going to have any of it. So they also made us do that, both working for the city that we're working for. So like I said, the 24/72, the start times, we actually also put in what we call a float position in our job, which has actually been very helpful. And I think it's been very beneficial for some people, because what you can do is kind of bid over to this float position and you work a 40-hour week, but you're also working, you're kind of covering training and stuff at the stations. So this rig's going to go out training. Okay. We have the floats that are able to cover during business hour days. And then it allowed a lot of people to, coach their son's baseball team for a season. And then once that was over, they could go back to the line schedule. I think it is just like little implements like that I think we could probably do better on.
Well, I've had, you know, a few interviews with people where both, you know, partners were working for the fire service, and in discussions, the 24/72, just putting that extra 24 hours in between, because we always talk about we got 2 days off, or we haven't, you know, you work from midnight till shift change. So that wasn't a day off. That was 8 hours. That was a full day's work. So you've only got that one day, which is day two, and then you're back to work again. Yeah. So putting another 24 in, now you've given these parents 2 actual days off in between. So even in your case, let's say, you know, you work A shift and Marcus works B, now you've got C and D then to actually be a lot more present. And if it's fully staffed and, mm-hmm. you know, we then reverse a recruitment crisis because people really want to come back into the fire service now that we fix the things that are broken, i.e. the horrendous work weeks and understaffing. Now it's just 24/72. So mandatory, you know, has gone away. Voluntary will come up once in a while. You know, neither you do A and B or you do A and C. You know, now you get to change it up and maybe have a day between. But now that's a 42-hour work week. So again, asking parents to work around a 24, you know, 48, that's, you wouldn't ask a bank teller or someone in a grocery store, okay, you're going to have to figure your way around, you know, arguably basically a 60-hour work week. You know, that's just, people will be like, no, I'm not doing that. But the people that call 911 and we respond, the ones that are going to be going to your family's worst day are working these crazy hours. And I think that in itself is a conversation, but the impact on families and these parents are having to juggle, you know, childcare and just simply being home, just not feeling guilty about not being there. This is a really important conversation. And the 24/72 is at least a big, big step towards not only healthy firefighters, but healthy firefighter families.
Yeah, exactly. I think that is one of the things I found within our home is the guilt when you come home and you're like, okay, I have to sleep. And so you're still not really here being able to spend that time with your family. Or even if you don't, if you choose not to sleep when you need it, you're kind of not yourself. You're not able to give yourself to your family in the aspect that they need or you want to.
Absolutely. Well, before we kind of go to some closing questions, are there any other areas that you want to discuss?
I'm glad we touched on the scheduling and also becoming, growing a family or having a family within the fire service, you know, ways we wish or would like to try and help make it more family oriented and learning about our health.
No, exactly. And I think this is the point. One of the things I've made comments on a lot recently is, and so many of this heard, you know, so many of us, heard this, especially my generation, when we came in the fire service, is you wait in 10 years, you'll be on your third marriage and have an alcohol problem. That was a running joke in police and fire and EMS. And again, can you imagine if you were joining an accounting firm and someone said that to you, you would just turn on your heels and walk out the door again. You know, if you, again, yeah. Grocery store, you know, retail store, whatever. Like, well, this sounds awful. I'm not going to work here. Thank you for letting me know ahead of time. I'm not interested. So the fact that this is, you know, accepted, and there's so many, you know, so many great parents that I know that were head over and heels in love with the people that they were with when I first, you know, when they first joined the fire service, and I watched their marriages get destroyed. In some cases, their relationship with their children get destroyed. This is a really, really important conversation because it's not a reflection of the job. You can go for 24 hours and give yourself to this profession and be fit and be mentally ready to respond to people's worst days. But you should also then be able to go home and keep your family intact and be present at their games and their recitals and recharge so you're ready to do the same thing, you know, 72 hours later. So absolutely, it's not a weakness. It's not a deficiency. It's actually the opposite. You know, we have to control the things that we know are broken in the fire service. And joking about alcoholism and divorces, there's nothing funny about that at all. That's just a glaring red flag that we need to fix something.
Yeah, exactly. I think one of the things I heard in the beginning also, going back to, oh, he used to be, or she used to be this and she used to be that, but they're not anymore. One of those like very similar sayings I had heard, they all say, give it a few years, give it a few years and you'll be the same. And I'm, you know, in the beginning, I'm like, no way. But then you give it a few years and you're like, okay, I see what they're saying.
Yeah, exactly. And you think, I always refer it to people's favorite athletes, you know, with some of these, you know, LeBron or whoever that's got longevity in their career. Can you imagine the locker room, them telling, oh, give it a few years, you'll be broken, you'll be, no, they're doing the opposite. They're trying to keep you going for a few more years so you can be an asset to whatever team you are. So I think give it a few years should be replied to, you'll be even better than you are now. Well, fantastic.
I would love that.
I'll sign up for that. Yeah,
exactly. But,
yeah, give it a few years, they'll beat you down, which I was told a lot because I was always trying to, you know, force change. It's like, no, you know, but what a horrendously toxic atmosphere that is, that you go in all bright eyed and aggressive and wanting to be the best version of yourself in the fire and the EMS world. And you're told, don't worry, they'll beat you down. Give it a few years. Like, that couldn't be worse, in my opinion.
Yeah. I'd really like to change that, especially bringing in new people. Just like I'm sure many other departments across the country and world having recruitment issues. And, you know, I think if that's just even one of the things we changed, it might help out a little.
Absolutely. Well, there's that blockbuster story. You know, if you look in the business world, they use as a case study, if you refuse to acknowledge that you need a change, then you end up like they did with, you know, like in the history books, you know. So yeah, this is where we're at in the fire service. You know, there is no need for any more studies or data. The recruitment shows what we're doing wrong. So, you know, go to the state of Florida, look at the 10 departments that are now switching to 2472, speak to Pasco County, speak to the city of Gainesville, speak to Destin, and ask them, especially Boynton Beach, it's been a couple of years now, ask them, you know, what they've done to turn it around. And there's the solution. All you need to do now is apply it to your own department.
Yes.
All right. Well, as I said, closing questions. The first one I love to ask, is there a book or are there books that you love to recommend? It can be related to our discussion today or completely unrelated.
Okay, I do. Actually, I just read this one because we are going through an autism diagnosis with my son. But I read this one book and it's about our gut health. All of our health starts in our gut, and I think we should all be more educated on it. So it's kind of Gut and Psychology Syndrome. I grabbed it. Just it's a great read for education, and just it doesn't even have to, you know, doesn't even have to deal with the diagnosis, but I think learning about our gut health is one of the things we should all be getting educated on.
Absolutely. Well, two things. I know we were just talking to someone in my gym about this the other day. Vaginal birth, you know, the child gets exposed to all the bacteria that it needs. And even supposedly the compression from a natural birth, you know, alters the bone structure and all those things. So then you have the C-sec, you know, epidemic that we have now where people are scheduling their births rather than it just being used when it should be, when it's going to be dangerous for the baby if it's naturally born. But then you look at the data on the children of firefighters, and we have a higher, you know, rate of developmental diseases, you know, all kinds of things, pediatric cancers. So going back to the conversation, not just of exposure to carcinogens, but the shift work, you know, that has an impact even on our children. So, you know, these are all conversations that we need to have on all these other areas. How can we improve, you know, the overall health of our child and try and, you know, minimize the chance of any kind of challenges that child would have?
Yes, absolutely.
All right. What about films, documentary, TV, any of those that you love?
Oh, I can't think of anything off the top of my head. I haven't been into TV as much lately, to be honest. I sometimes I have like a show to zone out, nothing too important. But let me think. I just watched that All Her Fault on Peacock, and that was super interesting. I loved that one. Good mystery. And then we'll stick with that because I think TV and I have been not so close in the past few years, just too busy with everything else, but in also trying to read a bit more.
Brilliant. Absolutely. Yeah. I think this is the thing, that the screen is amazing and there's some phenomenal television out there, but I think so many of us struggle to read again, even just from fatigue, but there's so much wisdom in books that I try and carve out time every morning now to read before I even look at a screen. So
yes.
I think you're doing the right thing, not the wrong thing.
Thanks.
All right. Well, the next question, is there a person that you recommend to come on this podcast as a guest to speak to the first responders, military, and associated professions of the world?
I mean, I feel like I have a few. I do have a friend, Samantha Hamilton. She actually competed. She does it for fun. Her and her husband both on a fire department. Oh, where are they? Colorado, or they're down south. She does a lot of traveling and trying to integrate health and routine into retired firefighters. And she's also on the, like I said, on the job as well. I think she's somebody that would be a great choice to have on here.
Fantastic. Yeah, our retirees are, you know, the forgotten generation. And it's so sad because we look at the stats and they say line of duty deaths were, you know, whatever, 100 this year. And it's like, no, not even close. Because, you know, in the military, you'd have the VA that would count all of our veterans that's what were serving and now are out of service and still being tracked. And it's not perfect system, but it gives you an idea of the ripple effect of the health issues. I mean, look at the Hunter 7 Foundation, you know, tracking all the cancers from the burn pits and all these other things. You know, most of those are veterans and not active duty. In the fire service, we have nothing. So once you walk out the back door for the last time, you cease to exist. You're not a statistic anymore. So I guarantee you that if you saw the stats of the mental and physical, you know, health issues and diseases and deaths, it would be staggering. It would be, you know, tens, if not hundreds of times of what we're told are line of duty deaths of people dying prematurely from their service. So that's a great topic that we need to talk more about, is how do we get people to transition into retirement as healthily as possible?
Yes, she would be a great one for that.
Brilliant. All right. Well, then the last question before we make sure everyone knows where to find you, what do you do to decompress?
The gym is one of the big things. And then, like I said, I've been picking up reading when I can. I'm reading all, I feel like a little bit of everything right now, just on the history of our government and our country, and then our health, and also the Bible. I've been trying to just pick up 10, 20 minutes of little of everything every day.
Brilliant. Yeah, I think our government needs to read the Bible again and remind themselves what Christianity is supposed to look like. But that's a whole other conversation.
Exactly.
All right. Well, with that being said, for people listening, where are the best places to find you online?
I have Instagram. I have Facebook, both Stephanie Waugh. You probably find my husband out there before you find me, and then I'll be on his page. But yeah, I have Instagram, Facebook. My husband and I are actually going to be starting to work on hopefully a podcast of our own, because we did start a nonprofit raising money for veterans and first responder mental health. And we're going to hopefully grow that into a podcast of our own, trying to bridge the gap in between our first responders and citizens.
Tell me more about the nonprofit.
We started it right after my husband won the World's Strongest Firefighter. He kind of wanted to bring that more locally and get more people involved locally. And so we started that the first year. We raised $5,000 to $7,000, I think, about. And then we had our second year this year. We actually paired with our Jeep Fest here in Toledo, and we raised $12,000 this year. So, and now we have our own, we're going to have our own spot within the Jeep Fest every year annually, and actually have a couple other exciting things planned for that. Right now we're running strongman events for it, raising the money, and it's becoming a great success for us. So we're excited about it.
Brilliant. And with the funds that you raise, what are you doing as far as helping the veteran population?
So we've actually just donated to other nonprofits, Veterans for Veterans, and then Career for Veterans, I think it was. We have our friend Bill Kiefer, he has his own nonprofit helping veterans integrate into, again, society after retiring. And so that we've just been donating the money to those nonprofits as well. Another one that we donated to was, like I said, or Veterans for Veterans is what it was. And what they do is They are working on having kind of almost like an emergency for mental health locally right now. Some people, like a team of people who you can call that will come show up at your house when you're going through a mental health crisis. So just making those connections is what we're trying to do.
Brilliant. Well, I want to thank you so much. It's been a really interesting conversation. You've got a very unique, you know, family dynamic between the two of you. And I think this is a conversation that we need to sustain is, you know, how can we make it healthy across the board, whether you're a single young firefighter or with your, you know, a divorcee or, you know, you're a nuclear family, but, you know, you're still trying to maintain that time at home. I think all these areas need to be discussed and, you know, having the both of you on your own episodes given a really unique kind of glimpse into that. So I want to thank you so much for being so generous with your time and coming on the Behind the Shield podcast today.
Thank you so much for having me on.